ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The birthday of life on planet Earth was marked by amoebas buzzing. Then they grew fins and legs and crawled from the warm oceans to land, changing gills for lungs and growing feathers and scales and climbing newfangled things called trees and soaring into the air, singing. And below them, in the depths of the oceans, the largest mammals that have ever existed moaned. And then, their naked apes stand on two legs, they make fire and start to chant. It's the beginning of music. A unique cultural expression, the height of sophistication and intellect that only humans shall ever reach. Or is it?
Good girl.
Lucy, the Amazon parrot, says no. This is What the Duck. I'm Anne Jones, and as the King, James Brown, probably once said, let's break it down. Think of the things that might be part of what we consider to be music rather than sound. Melody, rhythm, purpose. It's the organisation of sounds, like an artistic filing system. And surely we humans would be the only ones that could ever make music, right? Or could ever be affected by it. Well, investigator hats on, duck detectives, because we're going to go searching for music within other species, starting with our nearest cousins, the chimpanzees.
One of the chimpanzees I was working with, let's call him Ernie, he started doing what's called a pant hoot in a very interesting way.
A pant toot? Oh, a hoot. A pant hoot. Panting and hooting. Not sounding particularly musical to me, but Stuart assures me that Ernie is quite happy.
This is kind of a classic chimpanzee vocalisation where there's a slow build-up of grunts. Like
Stuart Watson, by the way, studies chimpanzees at the University of Zurich.
And then they build up to this great big scream, and they use this to show off to all the other chimpanzees, saying, hey, I'm the biggest, strongest guy in the room.
But why was Ernie's out of the ordinary then?
While vocalising, he would pull together some materials and build something that I think of as a kind of basic drum. He got a big rubber feeding tub, and he would turn that upside down so that it's, the bottom is facing up. And then he would get some wood wool, so like very fine wood shavings that they typically use for bedding, and put that on top of the rubber tub. And then while he's vocalizing, just before he gets to his scream, he starts drumming really, really hard on this little stack of materials.
Ernie should have been named Phil, after Phil Collins, because he has the ability to play the drums and sing at the same time.
So this was a really unusual behaviour that I had never seen before in a chimpanzee, and it was unusual not because he was drumming. Chimpanzees do this all the time in the wild, actually, and in captivity, they drum for different reasons. But in this case, he was combining different materials to create something to drum with, and this is something that I had not seen before.
So it's not just hitting stuff that's already there. Ernie Collins was creating an instrument.
What we found here was that Ernie didn't vocalise until after he was ready. He got all these materials, would take them to the corner of his enclosure, he'd build this little drum, and then he would start vocalising, which to me suggests he has quite a lot of control over when he does and doesn't vocalise.
So it's not a purely reflexive or emotional response. He's in control of his performance.
Secondly, he was combining materials together. This is really rare in chimpanzees, actually. They're quite creative animals. They often solve problems in ways we don't expect. But combining different materials into one sort of tool is quite unusual, and particularly to do this for a communicative behaviour. As far as I'm aware, this is the first example of that.
Ernie created an instrument out of multiple materials.
The third thing I think is perhaps quite interesting is that it shows a sort of forward planning in Ernie. He knew he was going to vocalize shortly, and so he was like, okay, well, I'm going to get my things together and make my little drum, and then I'm going to vocalize. And to us, this sounds quite trivial, but again, there's a school of thought out there that says that non-human animals are not able to think into the future. They just kind of exist solely in the present and react to what's going on around them at that moment. Whereas this, I think, shows some modest ability for short-term forward planning.
Okay, making an instrument and making a sound in a performance is one thing, but does Ernie or any of his primate cousins have rhythm?
My name is Chiara.
Chiara De Gregorio at the University of Torino in Italy has been investigating.
Yeah, I think that lemurs are mostly known for the cartoon Madagascar.
They're the ring-tailed lemur, and then there's the nose-picking eye-eye and the singing Indri.
So the Indri is the biggest living lemur.
Think panda crossed with a spider monkey.
Is this furry black and white primate.
Very black ears placed on its head like a koala's.
Which is, let's say, like a little child, a human child, as like they mentioned.
The Indri is one of about 100 species of lemur in Madagascar, and it's critically endangered.
And it's a famous one because it's the only lemur that communicate using songs. So it's a singing lemur, it's a singing primate. So singing behavior is very famous, of course, in birds, for example, as in humans. But not many people know that there are some primates like us that actually sing. So they do these very complex vocal displays that are composed of notes of different types that are not emitted randomly, but they follow a precise pattern. And that's what we consider a song.
It's not exactly pretty singing to our ears. It's more like the first round elimination of Madagascar's Got Talent, where the only instruments available for use are weather balloons and a squeaky gate. Let's get technical with it. But what makes this music rather than noise?
So once we record the song, we inspect them with a computer program and we basically go and measure the duration of all notes emitted and all silences. And then we start calculating what is the timing that goes from the beginning of a note to the beginning of the subsequent one.
This is a mathematical approach to music.
And so when the ratio of two subsequent intervals is 0.5, then it means that they are isochronous. Dun, dun, dun. So we analyze all this interval, all the ratio from all the song we collected over the last 10, 12 years. And we actually found that the Indri has this kind of rhythm.
But wait, there's more.
So most of the primates investigated so far are apes, so are closer to us, evolutionarily speaking. But they share with us only isochrony, that is the tan, 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 this kind of rhythm. While Indri are our more distant relatives, but still they have more than one rhythm that we use too. So they have different rhythmic categories. Some of these rhythmic categories are found in the intro from the famous songs by Queens, We Will Rock You, you know, the tum tum cha, tum tum cha. This tum tum cha is made of two different rhythms, which Indri performs during his singing.
Stand down, Freddie Mercury. Indris have this covered. So if you think that the integration of rhythm is a prerequisite for music, then Indri are musicians. But who will dance to their newest release?
So, for example, you're walking through a supermarket, you hear a song on the radio, and without noticing, you start kind of bopping along to the beat.
Dr. Adina Schachner is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of California.
And what's hard about that is that your brain and your mind is actually making a prediction about when the next beat is going to occur. So you're not just reacting to the sounds that you hear, you're not just reacting to the next downbeat in the song. You have to predict constantly when it's going to happen. And people actually move right before the beat when they're tapping to a beat. They don't move in response. They move as a prediction. It's this really complicated kind of mental representation in your mind of where the musical beats are that you're moving in time to.
And this is called entrainment, the ability to anticipate the timing of the next beat, plus express it through movement. You did it just then, didn't you? You knew when the beat would drop.
And before the work that I did, kind of a while ago now, people really thought this was uniquely human, that only people could move in time to an auditory musical beat, and that it was impossible for other animals to do this.
Yes. Your average human-centric view of the world, right? Plus, I've never seen a horse dancing at a club.
There was this theory by another scientist. His name is Dr. Ani Patel. He's at Tufts. And back in 2006, he theorized that maybe what we need in our brains in order to have this ability that we have to move in time to a beat, maybe what we need is a really tight connection between our auditory system and our motor system so that we can hear a beat and move in time with it. And so he made this prediction that only animals that are able to imitate sound vocally would be the ones who would be able to move in time to a beat. And that was a really strange prediction, right? Because it predicts that chimpanzees, bonobos, other apes, that's not the right place to look. It predicts that they will fail. Even though they're like really smart, really closely related to us. Instead, it predicts that you should go look in parrots.
In Paris? Oh, in parrots. Right. So that's what Adina did.
We went to go do some research with Alex the parrot. Alex the parrot is this really famous research animal who was studied for his knowledge of language and concepts and showing evidence that parrots really can understand a whole lot.
Sure, he could talk. But could he dance?
We tested if he could move to a beat. I made some new music in literally in GarageBand on my computer.
This is the actual song.
So that I could be sure that he was never exposed to it before. I went down there and played this music for him, made sure that nobody in the room was moving so he couldn't cheat.
Right, because copying someone's movements or instructions wouldn't prove that he had rhythmic ability.
And we saw this amazing thing that Alex started basically to dance. He started bopping his head up and down, what seemed like in time with the beat. And so we had data from Alex. We had data from another bird, Snowball.
Now, Snowball was a mega famous cockatoo with several viral videos to his name.
The classic song Snowball was known to dance to was Everybody by the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
He moves multiple body parts to the beat. He does a kind of diverse set of different dance movements that looks really human-like. Yeah, Snowball is an amazing dancer, better than most people. Like, that's the reaction that people get when they see his videos.
And so Adina had to prove that these parrots were moving to the beat, not copying someone off camera and not repeating choreography that had been taught to the bird through conditioning, you know, repetition, reward, and punishment. They had to be practicing entrainment, anticipating a beat and then hitting it with a sick dance move through their own volition.
And we did these really detailed statistical analyses of their motion that showed for the first time that these animals really were moving to a beat. The beat sped up, they sped up. The beat slowed down, they slowed down. And it looked really very human-like. It didn't seem to be like a reflexive response or anything sort of automatic. It looked really intentional. So that kind of started our exploration of this, being like, this is not a uniquely human thing.
You must have spent so much time on YouTube working out if this was all parrots that could do it or just really famous ones.
That's very true. I did spend thousands of hours not only watching parrots on YouTube, but then also coding their motion. For this paper, we couldn't use like automated motion tracking, but we did the motion tracking by hand. So I spent a lot of hours clicking on the location of a parrot's head frame by frame in order to track its movement over time in the videos.
Tedious, but that's what happens when you start to try and science up an art form like dancing to the Backstreet Boys, I suppose.
We had a bunch of people come into the lab and tap to the beat of the songs that were playing in these videos. And then we compared the parrot's movement to the human to see if the parrots were as accurate as the real people. Our standard for like how synchronized do you have to be for us to count it as entrained was you have to be as good as a person.
Well, were the parrots as good as humans at keeping a beat? Were they entrained?
The results were really strong. So these birds are really very accurate, some of them. Snowball, he was actually famous for a while. He was like on a Super Bowl commercial. He was like on TV, on talk shows as this like amazing dancing parrot. Indeed, that claim was true. Like his data really was that he was really tightly aligned to the beat.
But do animals even like our music? I mean, you might like country and western, and I might like deconstructionist pirate metal. And it's just such an individual thing. Maybe it's a species thing.
I play the cello, I'm a musician, and I write music for animals.
David Tai has composed music just for cats.
They would go toward the speaker, they would lie down next to the speaker, they would do some kind of scent marking, they would nuzzle the speaker, they would lie down and they would purr.
Cat-specific tunes, like this piece called Vostog's Touch, have millions of plays on Spotify alone. That's a lot of cats with logins to remember. But what is it that other species might actually be listening for in a piece of music?
What I did was I took music apart. If you ask the question of each of the indivisible elements, like why would that be recognized or appeal to us? An example is pulse. Is all the music of all cultures has pulse. And so we're listening to our mother's pulse for 4 months while the brain structures responsible for our emotions are being formed. I took that and then when I was writing for another species, I would figure out what was the pulse rate of the cotton-top tamarind monkey, for example, and include that pulse in the music.
Rhythms would follow along with the resting heart rates of the species you're making music for, or say, the rhythm of suckling.
You should know I don't use any actual animal sounds in my music for animals. It's all done on instruments and stylized. So I always use instruments, and my purr instruments, I have lots of the purr instruments. Cats purr when they're content, we know that, but they also purr when they're in pain, and they don't purr when they're all alone. And so it's similar to the human moan, and it's easy enough to imagine that the stylized sound of human moaning is very much part of our music. So a stylized purr then would be very much part of cat music.
And to find out if it all worked, a scientist called Charles Snowden took some of the cat compositions and played them out of one speaker. And then separately and out of another speaker, he'd play classical music like Bach's Air on a G-String. They found that the cats seemingly liked the cat music. They would show behaviours such as orienting their head towards the speaker, they'd move towards the speaker, rub against the speaker, they'd sniff the speaker, and they'd purr much more consistently and with a quicker reaction time than they did for the human-centric music. So, let's get rid of bark and play some meow. Please write in and tell me how your cat responds.
I get tears in my eyes because I hear from people who's, they have a cat who was coming back from the hospital and very much in need of some kind of comfort. They put on the music and they'll tell me that it just made all the difference for them. It encourages me to keep going with this.
And do you use music with your own pets?
It's interesting is that I've long been allergic to animals.
What?
That only a week and a half or so ago, we now have a dog, and it's a hypoallergenic dog.
Better start making hypoallergenic dog music, mate. But look, it may not be the music per se, but the frequencies that the animals are responding to. Japanese researchers played some Mozart to rats and they filtered the music through different frequencies. Rats with previously high blood pressure were calmed. Their blood pressure lowered when they listened to Mozart, not as we do, but that was filtered through frequencies you'd expect rats to communicate in. From one reaction to another.
So scientists are always trying to find out new ways to stop mosquitoes biting us.
That's mosquito expert, Associate Professor Cameron Webb from the University of Sydney and New South Wales Health Pathology.
And sound has been something that has been floating around for a long time as the possibility of trying to either repel mosquitoes from biting us or at least reduce the amount that they're biting us.
Okay, what track do I need on repeat for the summer?
There was some research that was done in Malaysia by some scientists who took a song and decided to work out whether or not it disrupted the ways in which the dengue mosquito might seek out a blood meal from people.
And they used Skrillex.
I'm not enough of an aficionado to describe what genre Skrillex is kind of sounding like, but they're a, sort of like a dubstep artist.
Yeah. But one that uses every frequency known to mankind all the time and very loud, as far as I can tell.
And the song that they used was called Scary Monsters and Nice Sprites. And I think that the scientists selected this song because it had a lot of high frequencies and it was sort of might, to a critical ear, might be considered to be a little bit annoying and offensive, and they were sort of wondering whether that might have an impact on the mosquitoes themselves. So the scientists took a mosquito in the laboratory. This is a mosquito that is responsible for major outbreaks of dengue, chikungunya and Zika virus around the world. It's known as the yellow fever mosquito, Aedes aegypti. And they exposed the mosquito to this song played by Skrillex.
Using tiny earbuds.
And they measured different aspects of the biology of mosquitoes and how they interacted with a source of blood.
I absolutely lied about the tiny earbuds just then.
And in short, the results were quite fascinating in that mosquitoes took longer to find somebody to bite.
Tick.
They spent less time feeding on our blood.
Tick.
And they also mated less often when they were exposed to the music.
Tick. And holy crap, when your music literally turns the sexy off for a mosquito, that's a pretty bad review. And if the scientists didn't use the tiny earbuds but a speaker, did the music have the same impact on them?
So, really fascinating result when a very unique study.
I am sensing some hesitation about this research, Cameron.
It's a fascinating piece of research, but we haven't all of a sudden seen local health authorities around the world, or particularly here in Australia, advocating that certain types of music should be played at your backyard barbecue to protect yourself against mosquito bites. And I certainly haven't seen this research expanded to look at the songs of Taylor Swift or the Foo Fighters to see how that might have an influence on Aussie mozzies and their likelihood of biting us.
Okay. It is interesting to think about, right? And Triple J consider this the pitch for a mozzie-repelling top 100 for the future. What the Duck is produced by Patria Ladgrove and me, Anne Jones, on the lands of the Kaurna and Wathaurong people. Thanks to YouTuber Marlene McCohen and her Amazon parrot Lucy for letting us use some of their glorious singing audio. And I've completely run out of time to tell you anything about bird song. But Hollis Taylor does it much better anyway, and she made a doco for The Science Show a while back that attempted to answer the question, is bird song music?
I am interested in the continuity between us and animals, not so much in what makes humans special.
And we've left a link to that in the show notes for you. And remember to find What the Duck on the ABC Listen app or podcast app and subscribe and even leave a review if you like. You can just make it pure animal emojis. Duck, duck, duck.
G'day, I'm tech reporter James Pertil. The very first time I used ChatGPT AI, I asked it to write a poem for my dog. The poem it wrote was heartbreakingly beautiful. Artificial intelligence is suddenly everywhere. It's driving cars, getting people sacked, and it's helping students with their homework. So how did we get here? Where's next? And who's in charge? In the new series of science fiction, Hello AI Overlords, I'm finding out. Science fiction, 5 p.m. Sundays on RN or anytime on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.